Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Off the Ball's All-Ireland Football Final Special in association with Boyle Sports. Tonight, it's legends all the way. We've got Jim McGuinness, James Horan, Kieran McGeaney, Aidan O'Shea, Cora Staunton, Peter Canavan, and Keith Barr. But first, would you please welcome on stage your host for the night, Mr. Joe Malloy!
Give them a warm welcome. We're delighted they're here. It's James Horan, it's Jim McGuinness, and Kieran McGeaney, everyone! Lads, you're very welcome. How you doing?
Good.
Good, okay, good.
Good.
Listen, I think it's time to call this extraordinary general meeting of the Mayo County Board to order. Mike Kennelly can't be here this evening. He's asked me to step in his place.
Secretary's down there if you want him.
Yeah.
The Mayo Secretary is down there. We have a member of the Mayo County Board here.
Right, okay. Oh, yeah. You can make yourself known. Just for a point of clarification, Kieran, are you applying for the Mayo job as well, or where are you on this?
Well, I'm going to hear what these boys have to say.
What's the competition?
We couldn't have set this up, really, you two, could we?
Well, you did set it up.
We didn't. You were booked long before
Rochford
resigned.
You rang us to be here.
James, what can you bring to the position that Jim can't, would you say?
Right, first answer was important, obviously, but, you know, what do I say? Where do I start? Where do I go? Interesting times, and really looking forward to the Dublin-Tyrone match at the weekend.
Yes, no, we all are. You're obviously the favourite for the job at the moment. Are you interested?
I rang Joe on the way up and threatened him not to be at me about asking a question. But here we go, straight away. Only joking. What was the question?
Are you interested, or have you made up your mind?
On the Mayo position?
Yeah.
No.
You haven't made up your mind, or you're not interested?
Well, I have an answer prepared.
Right,
will I go with the no?
He does have an answer prepared, I heard it.
basically where it is my position, and I'll try and give it as without giving too much away and or whatever, but the Mayo position has come available, obviously Stephen Rochford, it's very hot off the pan. There's, you know, the Mayo County Board have set up a committee to look into the position. I remember when I moved away in 2014, and straight away those people talking about the position or who would go for it or whatever, and I just thought, Jesus Christ, could they not give us a bit of space and give people a bit of space? You know, that's only ended. Can they just, you know, let the process happen and let things go through? So that's what I thought then, and that's what I think now. You know, the Stephen Rochford has had a very successful 3 years involved with Mayo. You know, the team played some of the best football, you know, against in All-Ireland finals even last year. We think about it, they played very, very well. And so I just think, you know, he just needs a bit of space. You know, you don't want people shouting, I'm going for it, or whatever it is. Let the process take its course. I'm manager of Westport, and really enjoying that, working with a young bunch of guys, very keen, very ambitious, and doing very, very well. And we have a huge game against Kilmaine, I don't know if it's at the weekend, where we can go top of the league, and we're in the quarterfinals of the championship. And that's genuinely where I am. I have not thought or have contacted, or no one has contacted me, anything about Mayo position, and I genuinely haven't really thought of it. So where I am now, I'm just very happy with Westport and continuing on with that.
Because I think you always did maybe have the intention of going back at some stage.
Yeah, I'm a Mayo man that absolutely loves Mayo football, and I'm a coach. I really love coaching guys that are ambitious and keen to do well. So that's what I love doing. So at some stage, of course, I'd love to get involved again. But is the time right for me, for the team, for the county board, or whatever? I don't know if it is. There's so much stuff there. So,
but it could be. You're not ruling yourself out, is my sense.
Yeah, where I am now at the moment, I would say for me personally, no, I've so much going on at the moment. So that's where I'd be at the moment. But in the future, who knows what happens?
Okay, I appreciate your you know, it's delicate to talk about a job where it's, you know, the king is dead, long live the king.
They cover most of their...
We got the full life story, we got everything. You have a game at the weekend. No, we're with you, we're with you.
I'm really excited about Jim's answer, though. That's what I'm going to do.
Jim, what do you feel you could bring to the position that James couldn't?
I'm looking for a good number two.
I don't know if Rory Gallagher is available, but you never know.
I thought you were going to say Leeser.
Oh dear, poor Rory. I'd say he opened the Irish Times fearing it for his life for a few years there. What are your thoughts? I mean, you were with Celtic for 5 years. No. You were in Beijing under a brilliant coach, Roger Schmidt, up until January, and then China's a long way from home, so you've come home.
Yeah.
Are you interested in potentially getting back into GAA, or is it still football, soccer?
No, I'm not. No, not at the moment. Definitely not.
Definitely not.
I think for myself, it's been a long journey of development, if you like, in another sport. These two men beside me, I spent all my life practicing to try and be an inter-county footballer. I managed to achieve that, and it was the greatest honour you could have and play for your county. And then to manage your county is the icing on the cake, in many respects, you know. But I was sort of plucked from obscurity in many respects and offered the opportunity to do something that is a massive challenge, if you like. It is a massive challenge, there's no doubt about that. I've had great support from Celtic the whole way along, from the owner the whole way through to the managers that I've worked under. And I continue to get that support and work still very closely with them. And I'm on a journey, really. And I've come back, finished my badges, my A license. I'm looking now to... I'm in a position to take a team, and I'm looking to do that now shortly.
Okay.
So that's where I'm at, really.
Because if you went in and did the Mayo job for a year or two or 3 years, that would almost be an admission, like I'm giving up on the soccer journey, really. It'd be hard to go back in after another 3 years away, I would presume.
I've dedicated 6 years to what I'm doing at the minute, you know, so it's I need to get the answer if I can do it or not, if that makes sense, you know. And I'm excited, to be honest with you, because I've recently got a lot closer in my mind to how I see the game, how the game will be coached, how the game will be trained. When I started out in Gaelic, I started out with a blank piece of paper as a very young man and built up what I felt was a way to develop a team and build a team and coach a team. I've done the same in soccer, and that document is complete now. I've spoken to a lot of high-level coaches around the world that have kind of stress-tested it, if you like, and sort of had a good look at it and give me feedback on it. And I'm feeling now just that it's getting to that point where I'm looking forward to see kind of make it happen, you know. So it needs to be professional sport. For me, it needs to be senior men. To test myself, because there's a difference, you know. There is a difference, and so I'm looking forward to that part of my life now.
Any coaches in particular that we'd know of that you spoke to?
Well, I could mention a number, to be honest with you, but you know, a lot of these conversations are in confidentiality, you know. And I've spoken to a lot of clubs as well, actually in Gaelic over the last couple of months, in terms of county positions, asking the same question as you're asking, but in football as well. And I spoke with Brendan Rodgers, and I speak to him regularly, and he said to me, the most important thing is, it's not about getting a club, it's about getting the right club. Mm. And he feels that's one of the things that he's done really well in his career. And I thought that was really, really good advice, you know. Stability. The owners, you know that you're going to get time, you know that the budget is there, the budget is real, there's a level of player. All these things you have to consider. So. Mm. Really, wherever the next step takes me, it doesn't really bother me, to be honest with you.
Okay.
As long as it's the right one for myself and the family.
I mean, it'd be an extraordinary thing if you pull this off and work as a manager in professional football. Do you feel your most likely route is in League of Ireland, in the lower divisions in England or Scotland? Could it be China? Have people given you advice about where you should be applying for jobs?
Obviously you have an agent, and then other agents that work in other areas that knew you were in that area, like in China, the coaches that have already been there, because they know the landscape culturally. And then you've got the States, you've got the UK, you've got Ireland, and there has been conversations with people and with clubs in all them jurisdictions over the last couple of months. But
and have you applied for any?
No, I don't think it's about that. Like, I think it's about a cultural fit. You know, you've got to sit down with people and you've got to talk to them and you've got to look in their eyes. You've got to tell them who you are, how this is going to roll, how you perceive the game, what's going to be involved in it. And then, for me anyway, I'm not asking them for a job. I'm asking them, is that what you envisage? And if that's a yes, then maybe there's a chance to move forward. Because, you know, speaking to a lot of people in the game, you know, you've top quality players like, you know, Teddy Sheringham played for England, Man United, you know, huge careers. And then they get an opportunity with one club, like, and if it doesn't work out, you're not a manager. So going back to the conversation with Brendan, it's just really important that you know what you're getting yourself into, and that you know that the people that you're going to sit down with have the same vision as you have. And that's so it's, for me, I'm very easy ozo in terms of where it is, as long as I feel that it's right for me and right for the family.
Right. And where are you living at the moment?
Glasgow.
Okay.
Because we moved the family to Glasgow. I spent 4 years trying to get them to Glasgow. I got them to Glasgow, and I was there for they were there for 6 months, and I went to China. So we've decided to stay in Glasgow rather than, you know, I don't want too many moves for the kids. Yeah. Whenever the next move will be, I'd hope it'd be for a number of years or a couple of years. And so they're well settled in Glasgow, the school's excellent. And so we'll wait until I make my move and then we'll decide, does the family go directly or let me settle in and then they go afterwards, you know?
Yeah, one last one in it all. And then I do want to talk to the three about All-Ireland Final Week and memories of it, because you've all been there and done it. You're unique almost in that you could give us a pretty good feel for the comparisons between an amateur dressing room where it might be 25, 30 Donegal men in a room all doing it for their place and doing it for their community and everything versus the professional environment where they're, you know, he's got a 4-year deal on that many thousand, I've only got a 2-year deal. Anyone could be transferred at any moment. Manager can get the sack at any moment. It's very much an industry. Is it much more difficult to create a good bond in a dressing room and a sense of unity, or very quickly, is it similar to GAA dressing room?
Well, it's a good question. It's a question I do actually get asked a lot because, you know, at the end of the day, for me, people are people the world over. And before I was coaching at intercounty level, I was a psychologist and I was working with a huge amount of teams up and down the country, junior level, intermediate level, senior level of club and everything. And you walk into a dressing room and literally you can actually work out the dressing room in 5 minutes. Who's the rogue? Who's the dedicated one? Who's the guy in the fence? Who's the, you know? And so people are people. And
which one was McGeaney?
He was the very focused, very concentrated one. That's the way he played. That's the way he manages. And, you know, this man's the same. And, you know, you just know very quickly what people bring to the table. So for me and my job in Celtic when I went there, because of that dynamic that you've just spoken about, it's important that you ask the question, why are you here? And what is this all about? And I would have often had that conversation with 26-year-olds. I'm going to fast forward here 6 years. You know, you're 33 years of age. You've just retired. You're sitting in a bar in Dubai. You know, what was that? What did that look like? Can you look me in the eye now and tell me that you wrung that dry, that you couldn't have got any more out of it, that that's the most that you could have got out of your body and your career, and are you happy with that? Mm. And that's a difficult thing to get through to players on that level, because everything is handed to professional players. They walk in, their gear's there, their food's there, their nutrition's there. They walk out at 1 o'clock. And so it's all take, 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 take. Mm. And so from a coaching point of view and from a psychological point of view, when I was working in that area, it's important to push back and to try and sort of be a mirror and hold that mirror up to them and say, listen, what is this all about? What is it really all about? And a lot of the time I used to, you know, talk to them about if they had a family member and they were hanging over a cliff, how hard would you hold on? And a lot of them would get emotional at that and think about it, because they always think about the people in their family that was so close to them that helped them get to where they were in their career. And they were saying, I'd hold on with everything, every single sinew in my body. You know, I said, well, that's what you need to do for your own career, because you're doing this for yourself, but you're also doing it for them, because that is what they all say. And so to have that perspective at 27, not 33, is the most important thing. And I think as a manager, that's what you need to do as well. When you're in a dressing room with fellas, you need to say, what's this all about? Mm. What is this all about? And then if you answer that honestly, I think things can go to a deeper level. And then I was speaking to Kieran earlier, you know, you need you need something driving you. You need a crusade almost to make top level sport happen. And so it's trying to tap into that emotional connection with players and sort of identifying that this is a moment in your life. It's going to be over very quickly. Mm. How can you maximize this and have a life experience with these 50 people between the backroom team and the players that will hold for the rest of our life? And for me, that's where I'm at in my life. As a coach, that's where I'm at in my life. I want that. I don't want success. I want that, and if the success comes, then I'm in a really good place. And I think there's a difference between them two things, and the older I get, the more I sort of sit on that life experience.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Kieran, what drove you, do you think, in hindsight, as a player?
I suppose I just wanted to be as good as I could get. Like, growing up, like, you were like always one of the stronger ones in underage. I had an older brother too, he's about 18 months older than me, and getting regular headings every week sort of tends to drive you on a bit. So we used to play football out in the back garden, and I suppose at that stage, when you were 8 or 9, my ambition was to kick the shit out of him. So it took me about 10 years before I was close to it. So then, like, when you get to like 16, like, I came from a small club, like, so I was playing senior football by the time I was just coming out of under 14, so like, you had like 4 or 5 years experience. And then once you got a taste of Intercounty, and like, and I always loved playing for the whole idea of playing for Armagh, and the fact that nobody had done it before, so there was a huge drive in me from about 15, I'd say, just to do that. Mm.
And would you like, I mean, the persona of you is complete obsessive. How fair is that?
I was thinking I was the Joker in the changing rooms, but just was honestly. I wouldn't say obsessive. Well, maybe at one stage. But like, I learned to have a bit of balance.
So when you were obsessive, what would that kind of mean?
In terms of what, training or?
Yeah, your daily life, your attitude to life.
It was different. I laugh now, like, you know, sometimes you get responses. I don't do social media for obvious reasons. I get enough abuse from the print without opening myself up to that. But like, I sometimes talk about, people talk about professionalism in GAA, like, and I was having a laugh with Jim coming in there about it. Like, I think it's the biggest myth out there. Like, we still train twice a week. Like, we were doing this 20 years. In fact, we were doing it 3 or 4 nights a week. And, like, I remember going to Blackwater Town. I used to hate it because there was no light coming off the corner of the changing rooms. And we knew when we were going to Blackwater Town, all we were doing was going to do laps. So you go there and there was a light down which shone the cone, and you ran around the pitch like the whole time. Like, and that's what we used to do 3-4 nights a week. Now you go and they come with fatigue index. Oh, I'm an 8 tonight, Kieran, I played for the club at the weekend, like, you know, I'm feeling a bit tight, or she has to rest. Like, they're pulled out of training left, right and centre. And you stick with it because that's what the physio and the doctor says. Like, they have their six packs but they have the six packs and the biceps to look after them better. But we don't train hard. And like, anybody that kids themselves outside the top 3 or 4 teams, like, so I haven't seen it yet.
Can I just say something on the obsessive thing? There's nothing wrong with it. You know, most people that get to the top, that's the one thing that gets them to the top. And sometimes in the media in Ireland, I think it's portrayed as a negative. You know what I mean? Oh, they're being driven too hard, or the this or the that, or oh, he's too into it. That's the very reason why that person got to the level that they got to. You know, so
I agree with that, because I remember reading one of the players sort of saying, like, you know, but like, all these fellas now, like, they can't drink, like, you know, 20 pints anymore, and they don't want to be putting stuff into their system. And you know, that's what I want from my kids anyway. Never mind professional footballers, like, or, you know, people who are supposed to be at a professional level. Like, but I still don't think it's at the level people think it's at. Over the years, I've got to train with professional athletes, and there's a big difference.
I'm 100% with that. You know, there's a lot of narrative out there that GAA players, oh my God, they're pushed to the pin of their collar, and it takes over their lives, and it does all this kind of stuff. And I don't agree with that. I think I'm 100% that there's a different level it can go to. Like, if you think, you know, cycling is huge in this country. Like, if you talk to any cyclist that's really keen in it, they're out every day. They're doing 100 and something miles. They're doing crazy stuff. Swimming is one in particular. There's 14-year-old girls swimming at 6 o'clock every morning doing crazy stuff. So there's a lot more sports that are at an amateur level that are doing a lot more than Gaelic players. So I think there's this conversation or narrative, I suppose they call it, about players doing all this kind of stuff. GA players could go to a whole
some,
different
some
level.
They would actually talk about it. I train with some of them, and they wouldn't train in a battery. I see these big double page spreads from these fellas all like life was so hard, and I'd done it. I was there going, they weren't the same teams as me because they didn't do that much training. And you only had to go and look at them to tell they didn't do that much training.
Right.
You know, so it's a big, I did train a lot. I like training. When I was, I suppose, my physical peak, done a fair few hours every week, I enjoyed it,
So I think, though, that the level is higher, a lot higher than it was. There's no doubt about that. Like, our lads are covering 10.5K at Celtic, they're covering 11.5 in Gaelic in 70 minutes as opposed to 90 minutes, and the pitch is 145 by 90, it's 120 by 75, so I think it's a very, very, aerobically, it's a very challenging sport, it's a very aggressive sport, and that's why probably you can't play, soccer players are playing 50 games a season, it wouldn't be possible. So it's like apples and oranges, in terms of comparison, but I think Gaelic players now are at a good level, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. So it's All-Ireland Final Week, and you'll all have memories of All-Ireland Final Weeks. What stands out for you, Kieran? What's the one that you often think of, be it, personal, behind the scenes, ones maybe we mightn't have seen?
I think there'd be a few ones that probably, sometimes the ones that sort of stick out more, the years you didn't do, I hate talking when that wee frigger's in the front seat there. That's Peter Canavan, just in case you was wondering who I'm all about. when you're preparing for it, I remember we had a team meeting, the players just before we played Tyrone, and we decided to take a particular tactic, and I've probably lived with that regret ever since. I'm not going to say what it was, but it was that meeting sort of sticks out in my head, because it's going back to that thing, having faith or belief in what you've been doing up until then.
So you changed for the final?
Well, we did. Joe had talked about doing different things, and we sort of made one or two different moves, and it sort of, from a mind point of view, and everybody was behind him. That was one thing Joe was good at. Tapping into what everybody was sort of thinking. But just that particular meeting was probably one of the things that stuck out. The other one was we went down to Dublin here the week before 2002, and Joe wanted to do a dress rehearsal, so we were out at the City West Hotel and we went to a pitch session up there, and I remember going in to work on the Monday, and John Tracy was my boss then in the sports council.
Yeah.
He says, you were training up in Dublin there, and I says, yeah. He says, a friend of mine was at it, he was saying he was doing some tackling grids. He's after putting a couple of grand in, he reckons if you're willing to hit each other that hard, you'll definitely hit the Kerry boys a wee bit harder. So it was a great day, that particular day, an ending justy. Again, to people who would have a sort of serious thing, but they stole one of the golf carts in the City West, and had to come to me in the Saturday because they put it into one of the lakes. And I had to go to Joe to try and explain why the McNulty's were actually driving the golf cart round when we were supposed to be at a meeting and stuff. So you have all of those sorts of things that sort of stick in your head, but not your normal run-of-the-mill weekly things running up in All-Ireland.
Amazing things can happen around All-Ireland week. Obviously, the aftermath as well, the celebrations are great. You know about it as a manager and as a player. You can have, and we have a video here, magical things happen where two titans of a county can come together and create something quite awe-inspiring.
But I'll view the world and make my destination Donegal.
Oh, I make my way from Mallon to Dundurin through Lamore, or Port Salon down.
That's enough, I'd say.
By Creesa and Glenties.
Daniel O'Donnell's never heard a voice like it.
Yeah.
The look of wonder in his eye. You kept going, by the way. That full video's on YouTube. You can check it out. It's all there.
We've seen it through, yeah.
Good singer. Not bad.
Yeah, try my best.
You've done it as a player. I've been involved as a player and then done it as a manager. So what kind of jumps to you around weeks like this where the memories must come back?
It's a funny one, because as a player and as a manager, the things the week before the final, the things that I remember is quietness. And I think that's because I kind of locked myself away. both times, and it was almost like, I wonder what's going on out there, type thing. And I just remember it being very calm, very quiet, very relaxed, and the build-up to it. The week after, both times, was exactly the same, and that was something that I didn't see coming the first time around. I was sort of half ready for it the second time around, but we ended up on a bus for 7 days, drinking. And so we, well, actually in 92, we got the train into Sligo, but once we got on the bus in Sligo, that was it. We were on the bus into Donegal Town that night. The following day, it was our draw, because Anthony Molloy was the manager, and then it was Letterkenny, and then it was Balba Fay, and then it was Inishowen, and we ended up, I ended up in a room with Tony Boyle, which is not a great experience in itself, at 6 o'clock in the morning, a week afterwards, going into the Saturday night, after we had won it. I'd only been home for a couple hours. Martin Gaffigan was getting married. We'd played centre-half back for us. He was getting married at 12 o'clock. They were banging the door down for us to try and wake up. We couldn't wake up. We were almost comatose at this stage of the game, and we were that tired. And I went out to the end of the road, because we had no cars. Our cars went Donegal Town. We're like, we need to thumb home here. We need to get a lift home, myself and Tony Boyle. And it was about 20 to 12, and this car went flying past, and it was Martin Gaffigan. And I was like, where are you going? And he put down the one. He said, I need to get into McLehanney's to get a pair of socks. And he was getting married at 12 o'clock. And that was the way that rolled. And then when we won it in 2012, it was the exact same thing. Uh-huh. But I knew they were down the back, we were up the front, but I knew what it was going to be in. And we took the cup. That's why we're on the bus for a week. Just nice. For out of your, we took the cup to every club in the county. And we spent whatever amount of time with each club and moved on and moved on and moved on. You get into Letterkenny at 2 o'clock in the morning. The disco finishes at 8 o'clock in the morning. You're back on the bus at 11:15, half 11. And the county board are all sitting around there going, this is the itinerary for today. and then everybody gets on the bus. And you know, it was so funny because there would be these lulls where everybody would be just trying to get a grip on the day. Yeah. And then next thing, everybody would start, and you could see lifting, and there was a certain tune that went on. Christy Toy used to always put it on the iPod, and then when that came on, you knew that we were going to be absolutely banging for about 3 or 4 hours in the bus. And then they got their dinner, and then once they got their dinner, it was like, it went through the floor, and that went on for a week.
Was it Jimmy's winning matches?
No, yeah. It definitely wasn't. That was actually banned. That was actually banned on the bus.
How long before that wasn't in your head? I'd say about 2015. 3 years of humming that
to
yourself.
That was another thing that I sort of kept myself far away from, was that song.
Did you not like it?
Well, you do get it in your head, it goes in your head, and that's where.
James, sorry to ask. I guess you probably just try and not think of it, I guess. Sorry. I mean that respectfully.
Why are you clapping that? What the fuck? What's that about?
I was going to say, this time next year, Rodders.
Well, all I can say, Joe, and I can say this with a lot of confidence.
In 2019.
When it happens.
Yeah.
7 days on a bus will be chicken feed compared to all that. So looking forward to that. But back to... Back to your original question, the week of an All-Ireland and preparation, all that kind of stuff, it's a brilliant time. It's an absolutely brilliant time, certainly as a player. As a manager, it's not such a brilliant time, because when you're playing, it's, you know, the management or whatever try to keep everything away from you. So as Jim was saying, it's right, it's, Jesus Christ, when is Sunday coming? You know, it's a long week, and it's, because everything is separated from you, you know, so you have all that, but... You know, you're probably at your fittest, you're in your best, you know, you're dying to play and dying to get out there. So it's a brilliant time, and you're aware of everything that's happening out there. And, you know, it's just a great sort of buzz. So I'm sure, the Tyrone Dublin players are just can't wait to get going. You know, it's a long night tonight. Yeah. They're sick of watching Netflix. They're sick of doing all this. They're just ready to go, you know. So it's a brilliant time in anyone's life, you know, preparing for that. As a manager, it's chaos happens. Chaos happens because you prepare so well, you do so many things, you have everyone, the language is right, the body language, you get everything right, but it's amazing what happens, you know. And like some of the stuff, we were going to matches, you know, the balls were forgotten on the way to an All-Ireland final, the bus crashes into a lamppost, all this sort of mad stuff that you don't legislate for happens, and ultimately it shouldn't really impact at all, you know, and you go and play your game, but it's just the whole buzz around it is such a good time or such a good place or time of your life, you know, that you try and enjoy it, but we will celebrate strongly. Rest assured.
In 2012, you two must have spent that week in the build-up to it thinking, I wonder what Jim's thinking right now. I wonder what he's going to pull out of the hat here. What will I do? Like, you're like a Rocky Balboa, kind of have a picture up in the mirror every morning and look at McGuinness and think, what are you thinking today, kind of thing.
I didn't know who he was. Jim who? Fucking hell. Of course, you know, the 2012, the year Donegal had, you know, you're watching them from an early stage, even in Ulster. You knew there was something, yeah. There was something building there, you know, so you're always watching out for top teams and top managers, what they're doing or what's happening. So, and I'm sure it's the same for Jim, you're watching from a long way out what's happening or who's doing what, you know, so no surprises there.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, in terms of a memory, one of the things that I always sort of reflect on now is, in the week or 2 weeks before the All-Ireland final, we were training in Balfay in McCool Park, and the evenings start getting shorter, and you start training, you know, and then all of a sudden the darkness starts coming in, and obviously at inter-county level, it's almost exclusively summertime when you're training, then you go back to your clubs when you're knocked out, and that sense of the darkness coming and sort of as last man standing type of thing, we're still in the championship, we're in the final, it's a very, very privileged position to be in, and sort of the darkness coming in around the stadiums, all that sort of always stuck in my mind that, you know, what a place to be, you know.
There's a few tweets coming in. There's a quick one saying, can you ask Ciarán, says Dave, is it true he has no cruciate ligaments?
That's yep. Right. None of neither. I've done the right one against Down in 94, or sorry, Galway in 94, and then I'd done the left one playing a charity match for Mayo about 3 or 4 years ago myself. Desi Farrell, Justin McNulty, and Senan Conn were down to, I don't know what year it was, he was in the final, like, and there was a charity match on down there. I heard Joe Bally was playing, so I thought I might get a crack at him. So I went down, but the crack was great in the car. You want to see the four of us reminiscing about all a lot of the stuff that you don't tell anybody else about. Like, and the crack was really good, and we bounced out of the car and ran onto the field, and the four of us hobbled off us. So it was, he'd done his Achilles, I think Senan tore his hamstring, and Justin went over in his ankle, so... Mother Nature was telling us. So, no, yeah, the two of them are gone.
And so there's no need to repair them?
You can... No, well, at the time, you know, you hate sort of destroying rumours, like some of the stuff that I've heard, like, you know, over the years of what I did. But the basic thing was Mullaban or Armagh wouldn't pay for it. They couldn't afford it. So it was...
They're not insured.
We're going back a bit now, so it was 94. And I'm not going to say what exactly was said to me. I remember going onto the pitch, but like, you know, we weren't going that well and things just weren't that important. So I think it was 94, so I was just told, like...
Sorry, I thought I misheard you. 94, so you 94. Played your career with a cruciate.
Yeah.
How?
I don't know, just ran one way and ran the other. Back.
Kuwait.
So, I know, it took me... That was October when we played the league games before Christmas. And my first game back really was we played Derry in the championship. I remember I was wearing a big strap on my knee, and we got a bit of a hiding that day. But like, it was funny. Mullaban had a great year then in the championship after it, but it was more of my head. Like, but I trained quite hard with a fella called Paul McCormick, physio at the time, like put me through like a fairly rigorous thing. Like, it was tough now, 6-7 days a week, you know, training on it. But okay. I've since learned that I mightn't have needed to do it because they say you have copers and non-copers with it. Like with the cruciate and stuff like that. So, but they're still, you know, I'm still able to, like I do other sports now and stuff, and again, they're stable enough.
Yeah, no, we've seen you grappling and at SBG. You're still doing that? You're doing that a good while now?
Yeah, it's about 10 years now.
Are you getting good?
I'm all right. I'm old, but so it's hard to keep up with the younger fellas, and like, you have a lot of fellas now from Eastern Europe and Russia come over and they'll have a lot of background and that sort of stuff. Right. Like, they'll be tough boys.
And would you come across Conor McGregor often these days?
Yeah, you'd see Conor floating about, so you would. Like, I suppose I'd know Conor back before he was famous.
Yeah.
But good lad, so he is. Like, he's a serious trainer now, like, really serious.
I wanted
trainer.
To ask you about that. So when he's not kind of, you know, throwing chairs at buses and getting up to all sorts of kind of business, you kind of, you strip it back. And I'd presume he's phenomenally gifted. Like, even the way he moves is kind of magic at times.
You know, would all be what they call it, like, you know, you could have a debate here on gifted, nature, really, nurture and all that sort of stuff. He works extremely hard, like he really does. He was a boxer first, and but like, you know, like at that discipline, you need three of them. Like, you know, like you need a wrestling or jiu-jitsu type of stuff. You need a striking game, and then you would need, like, what he called, be able to use your legs, kickboxing or one of those sports. So, but he works extremely hard. Like, when I first went to the gym, like, you know, he stood out because I didn't think, you know, like, at that time, like, MMA wouldn't have been that great, like, or BJJ, like, you know, like, my own physical fitness was, like, sort of kept me alive, basically, like, you know, but, like, over the years, as John sort of built it up, like, you'd see Conor growing and growing, like, in stature, like, and the amount of training he would do, like, and despite, like, his reputation out there, like, and the way he is, and like, he is like that naturally too, but he's also a very humble fella in terms of how he trains. Like, right. If you walk into the gym, like, and, you know, be white belted off the street, like, he did that there just before Christmas last year. He just came in and took a striking class. We'd roll with whoever's in the class or have a go at them. Like, he's always looking to learn, and that was the one big thing about him. Like, didn't matter who it was, he was looking to pick up whatever he could from him, like, you know.
Yeah. So he stands out as almost the hardest working guy there.
Yeah, but most people,
most guys,
like,
are.
You know, Jim was saying earlier on, is true. Like, that one thing, like, to drive somebody, but it drives you to work harder than everybody else. Mm. You know, like, there's a huge debate over there, like, about talent and stuff like that. But it was a great article in the Independent with one of the Tyrone players. Was it Kyle Cooney, was it? Yeah, like, just about, like, you know, when he stepped into the Tyrone panel, like, about he was bigger and stronger than everybody else, and he felt he was, like, naturally gifted, and he didn't work hard, and he just left behind.
Mm.
And, you know, it's a good story to read.
Yeah, we're going to obviously talk to you guys later on, predictions for the match and all that. It's been noticeable, there's Jim Gavin didn't say very much in the press, Mickey Hart hasn't done too much either. I was just looking back, I'd forgotten 2011 when Kildare played Donegal, and... Did you put Paul Grimley up to getting the ref on their case over the referee, or what happened there?
I don't know. I know Jim was very annoyed with me. So he was. And so was Michael Murphy, because afterwards he gave me an awful set of threats. But I was surprised, because people who had known me knows I won't even speak to the press when I have to, never mind when I don't have to. So but I never really actually got to the bottom of it. What was that about, Jim?
Good managers can speak to the press without talking to them.
All right. So, you're going to have to be a wee bit more specific. So you're going to have to have a wee bit slower.
And that goes on a lot at intercounty level, I can assure you.
So what do you mean? Because I scratched this itch.
The dark arts of Gaelic football coming to the fore here.
I'm still lost.
I'll chat to you afterwards.
From memory, Paul Grimley said...
Oh, jeez, here we go.
That Donegal were... I don't think he used the word cynical... Although you used the word cynical in your interview afterwards, but he said Kildare or Donegal were bringing that kind of play, and, you know, I hope the referees
tactically fouling.
Hope the referees wise to it. These were pre-black card days, so you certainly felt that McGeaney had nudged Grimley in that direction, I would think, and McGeaney didn't.
You definitely don't know Grimbo then. You don't nudge Grimbo to do anything.
And we worked very hard on our tackling, and we worked very hard on not fouling.
Mm.
But every new team is told that. Every new team that comes up is cynical or dirty. Like Galway this year. So I watched RTE and I got 40 minutes in Paddy Talley instead of 40 minutes in Roscommon and Galway. Like, every team that tries to break the mould, every team that tries to stand up, they're going to have to bring a physicality. It's a contact sport. You know, when we played Kerry, like, they were by far the most physical team. By far.
That day is gone, though. I was chatting to Keith earlier, Keith Barry earlier. The physicality's gone out of the game.
It's more manufactured, but I'm just saying, like, the people even strengthen the tackle and stuff like that. Like, in a contact sport, like, you need strong players that can play, like, both, like, sort of sides of the sword. And every team that tries to step up, the press take a pop at them. But then history rewrites us, and, like, you're champions, nobody writes anything different on the cup. Like, in my time playing, you know, like, it used to be a bit northern football, and, like, the next thing we'd go down south and we'd get the shit kicked out of us. Like, it was hard hitting stuff, like, nothing compared to what we got up at home. Like, and it's just because they were stronger and better than us at the game. Like, it's not a case of you have all of these athletes out there and they're not able to play football. Everybody's able to play football. Like, you're not going to find somebody in Antrim less skillful than somebody in Kerry or Dublin. Decision making under pressure, all of those things that become like a different part of what makes a championship team. But it's just every team that sort of steps up. So like, I'm afraid it wasn't me, but just every team. We got it. Tyrone get it. Like, you know, and I even look back, and it's not that I'm a massive fan of Tyrone or anything, but like, I remember them playing against Kerry in 2003, and I watched the semi-final, and I couldn't get over. Like, it was a completely different team. And the next thing I listened to the commentary about it, and everybody saying, oh, they're this, they're cynical. Like, and Tyrone are small. Like, they weren't a big team, but they were ultra-mobile. Like, yeah. They were moving left, right, and centre. They were hitting hard. They were tackling. There was no cynical play. They were just friggin' dynamite.
I get the impression that you're a fairly frustrated viewer of the media's commentary.
I just turned the friggin' thing down now. Just, right. You just... It is hard, like, because it's... You know, like, what I was sort of saying about training earlier on wasn't having a pop at the modern day player. I would agree with Jim. Like, you know, the demands of the game have went up, and they're in better shape, and they're better conditioned, like, in terms of how we prepare them. But that, a lot of that has to do with themselves too. Like, but I just hate the way everybody has a pop with them. They're born, they're this, they're that, and the other. Like, you know, when the game isn't as bad as people make it out to be, we just, like, you know, I just think we like to give out all the time.
People obviously agree, and that's very much your opinion. Like, it's interesting, Jim, you were writing in the Irish Times in the last couple of weeks that you were proposing various rule changes. Mm. We can, you know, the rights and wrongs of the various rule changes, but it's interesting that you were at a point with the game where you thought something is wrong enough for us to maybe tweak rules to improve it. So you aren't as impressed with the product. You don't feel it's capturing people.
Not to improve it. It's going back to the point I was talking about earlier with the physicality. The game has changed. And managers are a lot smarter. And managers look at every phase of play, like pushing up on the kickouts now and zonal marking and all these different buzzwords that are in the game. And managers know, if I do this rather than the old way, it's smarter. We're going to get better results. It mightn't look as good, but we're going to get better results. And for every phase of play now, that's what's happening in the game. And so you have a situation where... the coaches have sort of moved beyond what the rules set out. Now, if we rewind to 20 years ago, when people played in the half-back line and midfielders played midfield and half-forwards played half-forward, and the ball was always kicked, then we can go back to that style of play, no problem at all. But the problem is, the managers have really, really moved on. They're smart. They're outthinking each other. Video analysis is just everywhere. And so all of a sudden, Kieran's doing something in a championship game. They're playing the Ulster semi-final 3 weeks afterwards. Everything Kieran's doing in the first game, the guys that they're playing will be doing against them in the next game.
Yeah.
And so this is the way the thing is rolling now. And so you have a situation where I think some rule changes would create a dynamic. Because I think what happens is the game now is too slow, and it's too slow because everybody can protect themselves in every phase of play. Mm. And so what I was talking about was if you have to keep three or four bodies up the field, as soon as you won the ball then, you can kick to the... There's a link man. Alan Brogan played on the 40 for Dublin. Left or right, sprinting, winning the ball close to the sideline, linking the play, next ball, flick back, then into the full forwards, because the connection was there all the time. At the minute... A lot of bodies back, and when they won it, they're soloing, they're going up the field, and then there's nobody there to kick to. And once that guy comes under pressure, he's going backwards, and then the game. And so
you're going to have the referees going against you. You got everybody to go back in the first place. Now you want them to stay up.
That's right. You're right, Kieran. You're right, because we felt we had to do something different.
And I would
agree. The point to make is this. We felt we had to do something different to win. Yeah. So in the end of the day, it was smart.
But the thing about
the point
is
to make him.
But when we change rules, like our rule changes are at different stages of the pitch. Like, when you tackle as a forward, you'll get away with murder. Then when you tackle in midfield, the referee's looking to play it on.
I don't agree with that either.
When you tackle as a defender, it's a different foul.
I don't think there's any tackle anymore.
Well, that's a fair point.
Yeah, I don't think there's any tackle. Like, when we were growing up, I was saying to Keith earlier, Anthony Molloy, Brian McGilligan in the middle of the park in an Ulster Championship match, and you'd be in the pub after the game or that night, that would be a talking point in the game. Do you remember that hit? Do you remember that hit? And so I think the game's too sanitised. Coaches are responsible for that, but referees have a part to play in it as well.
I think on that point, I wouldn't agree with you in that. Coaches are outsmart each other totally. I don't know if rule changes are needed in the game. That's where I'd be at the moment. I think there's been a few tweaks with black cards and the mark and all that kind of stuff, and they're still teething themselves out. Last year we had some of the best games in Gaelic football that have been ever played. You know, you go back to the final last year.
But I mean, the final was exceptional and amazing and wonderful, but there was a sense it saved the season. Like, the final may have happened in spite of the rules.
Hear me out, Joe. Hear me out. You know, in hurling, you know, this year has been a very good year in hurling, but there's an awful lot of shit hurling games over the last couple of years. But
you can't say that.
Yeah, but the hurling guys will tell you that themselves.
They
will. You'd never. The narrative wouldn't be negative all the time.
Okay, so you think the media is...
I think the media has a lot to do with it. But just on coaches, because I think it's an interesting point Jim brought up, in that I think there's a lot of coaches that are copycat coaches. And sometimes that's obviously very good. But a lot of coaches have taken some models that other teams have used, and without understanding it or without really working it, is it what suits their team, have put people back. Or have put people here and have put people there. And they're not setting it up the right way. Like, when Donegal in 2012, they had such athletic runners, and then they had such focal point that made sense for them to do. But there's a lot of teams now that are setting up defensively, and they have no chance of winning the game because they haven't the counter-attacking runners or they don't have the focal point. So a lot of coaches, I think, are setting it up to keep a score down. And if you think that through, why would you do that? Are any of those players on that team really enjoying what they're doing? And where's the endeavour and excitement for a player in that? So I think there's a lot of managers that don't have the guts or the balls to really try and play as much as they can on the edge in an attacking and aggressive and forward-thinking manner. I think there's a group that just stays safe. So that's what I think needs to happen first. Managers being braver, and then see if there's changes or if there's something significant needs to happen.
On that? Yeah, we'll do a last point or two, quickly.
Just on that. That dynamic, you're right, that dynamic you're talking about there, though, that happens in professional sport as well. I see that at Celtic, and I see that at all the other clubs. Coaches are learning off coaches, and things are going on the following week with them clubs that they've seen in professional sport. It's happening in all sports across the boundary, if you know what I mean. I think that is an important point. And so you have to think about the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is there's an All-Ireland final on Sunday, right? And Dublin now are playing a very, very composed game, very conscientious game, and it's a possession-based game. Now, Dublin won the All-Ireland Sunday. That's going to be the template for all the coaches around the country that are coaching club football, and for most of the county coaches, they will be following that template. If Tyrone won the All-Ireland, they'll be following the Tyrone template. Donegal won the All-Ireland, you're right, James. Everybody started playing that way, but we had a certain group of players that were able to execute that game plan. Yeah. I was looking then 2 years after that, everybody had everybody back. They hadn't got the intensity, they weren't breaking, they weren't getting ahead of the ball, they hadn't got somebody like Michael Murphy or Paddy McBurdy to kick it.
You are finding a bit tedious to watch a lot of games. Is that?
I just think that if you think about hurling this year, the game's played on the transition. It's played at high intensity and it's played on the transition. Basketball's the same, I made the point in the column during the week. And I think if a couple of rule changes came in that facilitated that, you could get back to that relentlessness. At the minute, it's composed, it's controlled, it's possession-based, and we need to go back to relentlessness. And the hurl sends the ball 70 metres, and that's why hurling can be relentless. And I think that's the reasons I would say. I don't think the game's in any major difficulties, but I think a couple of rule changes could speed it up.
Yeah, it's great to get your thoughts on this. I mean, three of the kind of big thinkers in the game. One last one on a complete change of tack. I'd half forgotten, Ciarán, that within a month of you retiring from playing with Armagh, you were the Kildare manager. And you've been pretty much on this treadmill ever since. Are you going to stay managing for as long as you can? Are you enjoying it as much as ever? Like, are you going to just keep going until no one will have you? Or do you feel an end in sight?
That happens quite often. How it happened was, I'd retired from football, and it's a tough thing when you pick to retire. It is a tough, you know, especially when your life revolves around it. And somebody had rang me and just said, listen, I want to chat to you, but we're looking to pick up a manager, and we don't know what sort of questions we need to ask. And he said, do you mind if we just throw a couple past you, but managers, you played on them? So I said, yeah. So I went and they came to my house and asked me a couple of questions about what I would look for in a manager, as a player and stuff like that. And then he just finished the thing with, do you want the job? Can you think about it? And he was going, so like I went and chatted to a few people like I knew, and they all told me not to do it, so I went and done it. Basically. And I took Grimbo down with me, like, and it was a tough learning curve, but it's the funny thing about it is when you throw yourself into that, like, I was completely lost, because our first game was against Tyrone up in Oma, and the All-Ireland champions, like, they were up there, like, and we went up, and it wasn't a great game, but like we got a draw out of it, like, with torrential rain and stuff like that, and I was leaving thinking, I'm made here, why these boys are going to love me. The next time I was going out through the gate in some ways, you're nothing but a northern. And I got this thing, and the next thing, there was letters in the paper the following week, and I'm going to Grimbo. So, like, it was not a good result, and he was there going, welcome to management, McGeaney. He says, this is it, you're never right. And we played Galway the second week, and next thing went out, and we went up into a 7 or 8 point lead, and we ended up, I think it was 27-19, I think they beat us. And I was gutted, like, you know, it was my first sort of real defeat. Like, next thing, by slapping the bass, more like the way we play down here.
Right.
Like, what? You know, we lost, like, and it was that sort of thing. And then we played Donegal in the third game, and Johnny and Dermot had two great games, but we got beat again. And the whole talk with the county board and that was, like, Johnny and Dermot's bound to get an all-star, and we're on the third league game, you know, and yeah. These boy's going to get all-stars. And, like, I thought I went to a different planet, so the learning curve in my first year was steep. You know, so like not from the football end of it, like was the easy bit, like okay. The coaching, and that's nice, but it's the, you know, you learn to have thick skin, like it's a, you know, like it's been highlighted there with Eamon Fitzmaurice, like, you know, I thought that was just normal, you know, getting letters.
And, oh, the letters, yeah.
And all that, so, you know, people don't say it to you, I'm still thankfully just about the right side of 50, and people seem to be a wee bit skeptical of coming up and say it in the face, like, but like the amount of stuff that you have to deal with, like, and most of it all based on rumours.
What are the big rumours about you then?
Well, the first one was we were training 12 times a week, and I was there going, fuck, and then all sorts of stuff. Like, it's amazing what it is. Like, and people, like, I came out of the pool with my son there a couple of weeks, due into the championship, and this fella stopped me coming out, and he says, Kieran, like, do you mind if I give you a piece of advice? It's famous sentence you get a lot, like, and I says, no, bother away. And he says, like, well, you know, you have to take it easy on these fellas, like, you know, you're too serious. And he says, this thing about getting them to send you a breakfast. And look, that's what I mean, sending them the breakfast. Like, all your boys, you know, take pictures of the food they get, like, and they send it to you to see if they're allowed to eat it. And I'm looking at him going, are you serious? And I said, and he says, yeah. Like, he says, no, you're going to have these out. But I goes, I find it hard enough to get myself out. And I have three kids. And I said, it's pandemonium in our house in the mornings. Like, you know, like, and I'm sitting there going, flicking through, like, these boys to see if they can eat what they want. You know? And you're just going. And it's that, like, and it's, now there's worse rumours, but...
Go on.
Like, one fella, like, telling me, like, that, you know, about taking these fellas, the guy was taking them for weights in the morning at 6 o'clock, and he was there sort of saying, like, you know, like, you're going to have to sort of take it easy on them. Like, I'm hearing fellas, like, he says they can't even walk down the steps, and, like, you know, at, like, 6:30 and all this here, like, and you have to get there half an hour earlier to psych yourself up for it. And I'm going, like, these people not think I sleep. You know, like, so it's all of this sort of stuff, yeah. And it builds up into an awful sort of thing. But then, like, one of the worst things that happens with that is people in the club listen to it. The next thing, you're flogging players, and you're doing this to them, and you're doing that to them, and psychologically scarred, and, you know, like, people are in their ears and stuff like this here. Like, and it's getting to the stage, like, you know, we talked about earlier, this thing about, like, you know, playing for your county is such a chore. Like, and I agree with the two fellas. Like, we loved playing for our county, and that's why we got back involved. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, you just, there's a buzz around it, like, and to be able to say that you're part of something that's bigger than yourself, I think is a massive thing in your life. Like,
and are you enjoying it now? You're going to keep, I mean, there's no end in sight for you.
I wouldn't say, you know, like, I went through two tough years in Armagh.
Yeah.
I did, like, there's no much point in saying anything different. Like, it's like a difference when you have kids too, because, and like a wife, because I can deal with the stuff.
The criticism.
Yeah, like, and most of it and stuff like that there. And especially the stuff that isn't true, like, you know, you can, you know, it can be sort of water over. It does get to you at stage, but then when it starts affecting your home life or your mum and dad, like, my dad stopped going to games. My dad has followed me everywhere. I mean, like, to Australia, to London. He is, like, you know, like, they were in the football before I came along, and they went to every single game as a player and as a manager, and he ended up, like, he just couldn't take it anymore. He goes to some of the games and he just sit outside. He just can't take the abuse.
You're kidding.
Yeah, my sister would be, like, and you just go, like, because I'd be the same at club games. I sit at the back wall, like, when I go to watch the club championship games, because I listen to supporters about their own players. And you're just going like, Jesus, give them a break.
You know, did your dad make that decision, or did you say?
No, dad's, you know, he just was getting into, and again, like, about things that aren't.
So he would try and defend you, is what?
No, I wouldn't even say defend. Like, he'd just tell people to shut them up.
Yeah.
You know, like, it gets to the stage you can't watch a game because of the stuff coming out. Like, again, like, it's, and if you listen long enough, you know, sometimes, you know, it's going to that sort of thing is, like, you know, better people to think you're feeling saying nothing, to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Like, well, you know, you can tell that at a football match in a big, big way. Like, but, you know, because they eventually come round. Like, one of the games this year, like, in the championship, like, there was this fella standing behind me and he never shut up. And he was on with Conor McGregor and MMA and all of this stuff. McGinney, you're a bollocks. And this was incessant. And the next thing, we had a good comeback. And the next thing, he's jumping on top of me and the McGinney, you're a great lad. I just, you know, but that's, you know, you just have to learn how to sort of take it, like, you know.
Yeah.
I heard a good saying on the way down in the podcast, like, there's more horses' asses than horses in the world. Like, so you just have to learn to...
Well said. Lads, that was brilliant. I didn't touch on half of the stuff, but you're going to come back on later on and tell us what you think is going to happen on Sunday. But I think you'll agree they were brilliant and gave us so much. Jim McGuinness, James Horan, Kieran McGinney.
GAA on Off the Ball. Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.